The Diamondbacks kick off a very important second half of the month of July as they travel to Wrigley Field to take on the Cubs. Joining me today on the Snakes and the Diamond podcast is Jack Vita out of Chicago. So, Jack, how are you doing today?
Great, Michael. Thank you for having me back on. Enjoyed discussing the last Cubs-Diamondbacks series with you a few months ago. Didn't quite go the way that I thought it was going to go at the time. I guess it was kind of payback for last year. But, yeah, I just got back to Chicago. I was staying out in Arizona for the last few months. But anyway, thanks for having me on. And big fan of yours, big fan of the show. So thanks for having me back.
We got a big series between the Diamondbacks and the Cubs, with likely the winner of the series getting the season tiebreaker, whether it's the Diamondbacks on intra-division record or the Cubs taking the head-to-head record. And with the two teams pretty close in the wild card race, it could be a series that we look back in October as a key series for either team and how their postseason chances ended up going. So are you excited for...
Go ahead. Sorry.
Are you excited for the series to see how this one's going to shape out?
Well, I think the Cubs have four huge series here, which are going to determine what they do at the trade deadline, because right now they're 47-51. They're four games under 500. Just about 2 weeks ago, the outlook was looking much, much worse for them. They were close. I think they were maybe eight or nine games back. Went on a little run, swept the Orioles right before the All-Star break, beat up on the Angels. Split a four-game series in St. Louis. So there's a way you could spin this and look at this team and say, you know, this was exactly where they were last year. They got it going in the second half, but ultimately it wasn't enough to get into the postseason. So, I mean, you mentioned this being a big series. This is a huge, huge series for the Cubs because they got two home series here. They host Arizona, then they host Milwaukee. Then they go on the road and they play at Kansas City and they play at the Reds. And those four series, those 12 games, are going to make a huge, big determination. Is this a team that's going to be going for it and actually in the mix, or are they selling off some of these parts in a couple of weeks?
Because I feel like the Diamondbacks are in a similar situation. Because if you look at the Diamondbacks, obviously three against Chicago and Wrigley, then they go to Kansas City to play the Royals on the road. And then after an off day, they come home to play the Pittsburgh Pirates and their all-star game starting pitcher, Paul Skeens. I'm not sure if he lines up for that series, but I assume if he's not their first starting pitcher out of the gate for the all-star break, I assume he's going to line up for the D-back series, which is obviously going to be a big problem because nobody's figured out how to hit him yet. And after that, they have a little bit of a breather against Washington. Washington's kind of fallen out of the race. The Diamondbacks match up well against Washington, and that's kind of the four series that Diamondbacks will play before deciding whether or not to make moves at the deadline. And I feel like Diamondbacks are kind of in a weird situation where they don't necessarily have all the pieces to go out and land a big name in the trade market, but they could probably supplement their roster at the margins, like adding a useful reliever to their bullpen. Both a left-hander and a right-handers, I feel like, is where their best... best return on investment they can do at the trade deadline without completely decimating their farm system.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, it was your turn to talk.
My hope, if I was a Diamondbacks fan, my hope would be that this team could get better by seeing progression from the Corbin Carrolls and the Gabby Morenos and some of these guys who got off to a really poor start in the first half. It's hard for me to believe that Corbin Carroll is going to be a 210 hitter all season long. Is that where he's at, 210 right now, Michael?
Yeah, I think he's hitting 212, although he did have a two homer game against Toronto on Saturday.
So instead of career high RBI. If you can get Corbin Carroll to come back to at least a fraction of what he was last year, which he hasn't been yet this year, and you can get this team to get a little healthy, if Jordan Montgomery can turn some kind of a corner, maybe he stretched out a little more because he had no spring training. Like, that's a way you could kind of talk yourself into this team, not in terms of they're not actually going out and making trades, but those reinforcements could come in the form of some of these guys just kind of reverting back to what we know they can be.
Yeah, and I look on top at Diamondbacks have three starting pitchers on the IL and their books expect to be back within the next month. Rodriguez and Merrill Kelly are in the throwing phase. They're in the bullpen, so they're building them up. Looking at a mid-August return, I think Kelly said he was hoping to be back by the time they go out to Tampa Bay on August 16th. Rodriguez, I think, is one step ahead of him in recovery process, and then Montgomery is expected to be back on this upcoming road trip. So I'm not sure if he'll pitch in the Chicago series. You could almost bank on Zach Gallen and Brandon Pfaadt pitching that series. But since it's an important one, they're going to send their best pitchers.
Yeah, and I think it's actually a little bit of a different outlook for each team, because Arizona just got over they just got over 500 like a couple days ago. It just happened. They're finally over 500 for the first time this season, I believe. And it's like, okay, can this be like the Braves team 3 years ago, where something just kind of clicked once they got into August and then they ended up winning a World Series? They were very banged up, very injured. I don't see that with the Cubs, because I think with the Cubs, it's like, okay, they played their best ball just to get up to like four games below, and they could get back over to 500. That's very possible. But I don't see any aircraft carrier type players in this lineup for the Cubs, as Dan O'Dowd describes. I mean, they do not have a star player on this team. There isn't a guy who can carry the freight on the offense. And in fact, do you know who their best player has been this year offensively, Michael?
Michael Bush?
Yeah. Yeah, Michael Bush coming in as a rookie. He's been a godsend for them. But aside of that, I mean, really, they're paying a lot of money. And I'd love to get into talking a little bit about the trade stuff here, and I'd be curious to hear what you think. But right now, the Cubs have two prospects that are knocking down the door of the big leagues, and Owen Casey and Alexander Canario. Canario, of course, they got in the Chris Bryant trade 3 years ago. And then Owen Casey, they got in the Yu Darvish trade also three and a half years ago. And the scouts I've talked to have said Casey is the guy. This is the best position player in the Cubs farm system. That includes Pete Crow Armstrong, who has not found success at the major league level yet. Casey is a corner outfielder. He's got a little bit of pop in the bat. And he's played like 76 games in AAA. He's batting around, I think he's like batting 279 with like a 389 on base, or maybe a 379 on base, something like that. And he's got power. Casey's ready for the big leagues. And then Canario has come up at different points. I think he just got brought back up, and they really haven't found a way to play him regularly. And I look at this Cubs outfield, and they're paying a lot of money. Bellinger, Suzuki, Happ, those three guys, plus Jameson Taillon and Dansby Swanson, you combine those five guys, they're paying a combined $400 million for those five players, which really I don't think is a very good return on your investment. I think that's a lot of average in there. Now, I think Seiya Suzuki could be a really good piece for a contending team to add a corner outfield bat into their lineup. Happ is playing a lot better right now, but I mean, again, it's kind of like he's on a hot streak. It gets him up to 243 right now. Bellinger just got injured, but I think the thing that the Cubs need, they're in a weird spot right now where they don't have stars at the major league level. Bush has been their most promising asset, and they need to get some of these minor league guys up in order for them to get to that next level. Like that's what they did 10 years ago, where they started getting the Bryants and the Russells and the Schwarbers and all those guys coming up, and that pushed this thing forward. I think there's a higher ceiling with those prospects. I'd like to see what those prospects can be, but in order to get them ABs, they're going to have to move some of these guys, and Happ and Suzuki both have a full no trade clause.
Yeah, because I look at Chris Bryant and all those core guys that led to that 2016 championship, I would consider them better prospects than what the Cubs have right now back then.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bryant for sure, but I think some of these other guys, I don't think it's too much of a gap. I mean, I really like Casey. I'm interested in Canario. Canario's not a huge prospect. Casey, I think, could be the superstar prospect that comes out of this group. And then in terms of infielders, you've got Matt Shaw and James Triantos, who we got a good look at the Fall League. What do you think of Triantos out there?
Well, I didn't see much of the Fall League last year because I was assisting on postseason coverage.
Yeah. And when you were out there, you were at Salt River Fields, and we were covering different teams out at the Fall League. But Triantos, you know, he could be a poor man's Dustin Pedroia. I really am interested in some of these prospects. I do think that there was probably a higher ceiling with obviously a Chris Bryant, who is a number two overall pick, and the Cubs haven't picked that high in a draft yet. They've been picking kind of like around the back end of the top 10 into the, like around like 10 to 15 each of these years. But I mean, I don't know. I'm very intrigued by Casey, and I think you got to at some point get a chance to see what these prospects are. I would say that they've done a much better job of developing pitching than they did in that era. The Cubs really didn't have any big time pitching prospects that came up. The best pitching prospect that they had back then was Dylan Cease, who they traded for Jose Quintana. But over the last couple of years, you know, they've developed Justin Steele, Javier Assad, Ben Brown, Jordan Wicks. Now, some of those guys are injured right now. Cade Horton is somebody that there's been another guy the scouts absolutely love. So I think in order for the Cubs to kind of get back to being a competitive ball club, they need to build through their farm system, and then you can go out and you can add those pieces and you can sign free agents and fill holes where you see those holes. They've kind of done it in reverse order, where they went out and they spent big money on Swanson. They extended Ian Happ. I don't know. I don't think the Bellinger Suzuki contracts are all that bad, because, you know, Bellinger could have just been a 1-year deal. If he had a great year, he would have opted out. That's a short term thing. And they don't really have a whole lot aside from Pete Crow Armstrong in terms of like center field prospects. And PCA has been a bust so far. But then Suzuki was another one where you signed him from Japan. He was a young guy and he could potentially be a star at the time. But they have right now, they have a glut of outfielders and they've got good outfield prospects. And I think you got to find a way to get those guys up to the big leagues and see what you have in them.
Yeah, I could definitely see that, especially if Chicago fades down the stretch. Like you said, that's a tough stretch of teams. You got, Kansas City's obviously a team that's kind of faded a little bit after their hot start. And you got the Diamondbacks who've been treading water through the end of June, but have gotten hot of late, 8-5 in July, and certainly could have been better. One pitch here or there in about three games. But like I said, it's a series that's going to probably determine the direction of the two teams.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big series for the Cubs. And I mean, I think the thing is, will they have learned from what I think was a mistake of last year, which was not selling at the deadline last year? They had Bellinger to move. They didn't have to extend Ian Happ. They could have traded him. And I think that would have positioned them better for this year. Instead, it's a little tougher to trade Bellinger right now because he's got a bigger contract. He's injured. And then Suzuki and Happ both have a full no trade clause. So you need to get them to waive the full no trade clause. I think Suzuki would probably be the guy who I think would probably be the most likely to be traded. I think he's a better player than Ian Happ is. I think he's the type of bat that if you are a contending team and you need a corner outfielder, you could slot him into your lineup. If he's like your fourth or fifth best bat, I think he could be a really, really good addition to a lineup there. I mean, he's a career. I think he's batting like .270. He's at a decent on base. 334 on base this year, 813 OPS. That's a good player right there. I just think that they're going to have to move at least one of these guys. And I think he's probably the most attractive as a trade asset. If you were another team, which one of those three guys would you be the most interested in adding based off of kind of what the contracts are and their ages and health and all that?
I mean, if you look at Suzuki obviously I think has a more favorable contract because Bellinger doesn't have a consistent track record of playing in recent years, although Bellinger certainly is above average across the board this year. And while Suzuki is under the next 2 years, you have him for $38 million. Of course, there's also the question of him staying healthy and being able to maintain his current output at the plate. As you mentioned, a 125 OPS plus for and slightly above average right field defense. You'll take that for $38 million for 2 years, but obviously he's going to be on the wrong side at 30, so you have to be on the lookout for that.
And I think the guy who's probably the most likely to get traded, if they do in fact go down this route, and I'm not convinced that they will, because I think there's a chance that they're going to kind of run it back like they did last year. But I think the guy who's probably the most likely to get traded is Jameson Taillon, who is having a bit of a resurgent year. He's got a 3.1 ERA. Last year, he really struggled. They're paying him not a huge amount of money, but he's under contract for the next 2 years. I think it's like probably somewhere between, he's making probably $18 million a year. And I don't know. I think the Cubs right now, one of the things that you hear a lot of criticism with the Cubs is they got to spend like a big market team. Well, their payroll is only $20 million shorter of the Phillies. Phillies are only spending $20 million more than the Cubs are right now. Cubs are spending the money. They're spending $70 million more than the Cardinals. Cardinals are in front of them. They've got double the payroll of the Brewers. Brewers are kicking their butts. It's not a matter of spending money. It's a matter of where are you spending that money. So I actually think it'd be good for them to shed a little bit of that payroll, because they've got a lot of these kind of contracts that are glutting up their team. And Taillon, I think, would be a good piece for a team that needs a starting pitcher, because there really isn't much available in terms of starting pitching at this deadline. It's definitely a seller's market, and teams are always desperate to add pitching. So I think he would fit that bill.
Yeah, and I think I read this morning that the St. Louis Cardinals are looking for starting pitching, but obviously Chicago's not going to trade Taillon to St. Louis.
That one's not happening. I don't think that one's happening.
That's about as likely as the 49ers trading Brandon Ayuk to the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, no, that's not happening.
But obviously, I think Taillon could get a decent amount. But again, a 32-year-old injury-prone starting pitcher isn't going to necessarily fetch a large return necessarily that could make it worthwhile for Chicago. I think they hold on to him.
Okay. I think it makes sense to move him, because they do have a lot of good starting pitching. And, you know, eventually Cade Horton will come up. Maybe it's next year, but you want room in the rotation for more of these young guys to be able to pitch. So I don't know. I think that he's expendable. As it relates to the Cubs' struggles, I'm curious to, what do you think is the problem with this team? Why is this team a below 500 team? A lot of people thought they would win the division. I didn't think that, but a lot of people did. I think the fans around here are very disappointed with this club. What do you think is the problem with this club?
So kind of just looking at the Cubs numbers statistically, obviously their Shota Imanaga has been exactly as good as advertised for them. And then the Bush trade has gone well for them. Hap's been a very solid player. Because even though he's hitting .243, there's walks and homers in his batting profile, and that's going to lift up that OPS pretty well. Oh, and it's over 800.
Yeah, he's starting a rotation. Lot more than he normally does. He doesn't normally put out this kind of power.
If I were to say the number one problem for Chicago is their offense, in my opinion, doesn't get the job done. Because you can't really blame the starting rotation in general, because the four-headed monster of Imanaga, Assad,
Steele.
Yeah, Steele and Taillon have combined for almost 8 war between the Thor, and you'll take that with your 1-4 stars. The 2/3 point of the season, we're somewhere between 60 and 70% of the way through the season, even though they call it first half and second half.
They do. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the big problem, and it's been interesting because I think initially what everyone was complaining about was their bullpen, and their bullpen has been bad. Make no mistake about it. But the problem is when you don't have a great bullpen, your bullpen's mistakes are magnified so much more when you can't score runs. So if you if you're scoring five runs a game, like you're going to win a lot of games where you're going to give your bullpen a little bit of wiggle room there. So if you're getting this kind of output from your starting pitching, your bullpen has to be perfect if you're not scoring runs, because when you don't, when you play a lot of close games, you need to have a great bullpen. And the other thing with bullpen is bullpen can kind of like fluctuate from year to year. So like, take a look at Cleveland last year. Their bullpen lost them, I think, 30 games, and they have a really good bullpen. That just, they played a lot of close games. They didn't score a lot of runs. This year, their bullpen is back among the league's best, and they are 20 games over 500. So I don't think that the bullpen is like, it's not good. In order to compete, you need to have a good offense and either a good rotation or a good bullpen. You need two out of three, and one has to be the offense. And this offense is not good. It's not consistent. It doesn't score runs. And again, based off of what they're paying for these guys, Dansby Swanson, $177 million, he has a 280 on base. Those are pathetic numbers. So, just if you kind of look around their roster, a lot of guys who could be solid players on other teams who would be like, okay, that's a good guy to have in your lineup as a solid player, maybe a Nico Horner or, you know, an Ian Happ or say a Suzuki, but they're not the guys who are going to carry your offense. Last year, Cody Bellinger was that type of player, but we didn't know if he was going to be that player again, as evidenced by the fact that he didn't sign a contract until March because there wasn't much of a market for him.
Yeah, and I would say Bellinger's numbers kind of regressed down to the X stats from 2023, and I'll pull those up real quick. The main concern with Bellinger was the repeatability of his 2023 numbers, and it turns out that was a legitimate concern, and as the numbers have backed up a little bit in 2024.
Yeah, another concern I think some people had was it wasn't just, you know, the kind of flukiness of maybe him. Like, I know one of the concerns was like, okay, he's choking up on the bat. He's slapping the ball in play. He probably should have a lower batting average. His exit velocity's down. I hear all of that. That was definitely a concern that was talked about. I think the Yankees talked about it. But the other concern was some of the stuff just in terms of like his kind of desire to be at the top of the mountain as an elite player, like his work ethic, some of the choices he makes off the field. Those were some of the things that front offices were concerned with, because you have a guy who wins MVP, and then after he wins MVP, those 3 years, he was a below average player. So what happened there? Because he's got that ability to be that type of player, as we saw last year. So I think that was another big thing that really dried up his market last winter.
Yeah, and he had this, and he basically signed a pillow contract with the Cubs, although that's looking like a $80 million commitment now.
Yep, it is. I mean, he could opt out after next year. Maybe he gets those numbers back up. There was a report, I think it was Jesse Rogers, I want to give credit where credit's due, he did say on ESPN 1000 Chicago recently that the Yankees have been interested in Bellinger. So I don't know. I mean, they were interested in him last year. I imagine last year, if they had traded him, that return would have been much better than this year. Now it might just be moving a contract, which the Yankees can do. And I think he'd fit in well with that club because, you know, he's a left-handed hitter, short right field porch. There's obviously the history with his dad being a Yankee. They could really use a guy like that in center field. Trent Grisham has not been hitting the ball very well for that team. But Bellinger brings the defense, and he's a better bat than Grisham is. So I think that could make sense, especially considering how much the Yankees, I think the Yankees are going to try to do something here, given how poorly they've played over the past few weeks, where Boston has essentially caught up to them.
Yeah. And I also think Bellinger would slide in at first base. I think they're playing Ben Rice at first base right now, and he's done a decent job so far, but I think they're going to want to go with a more sure-handed thing and down the stretch.
Yeah. And they could do that. There's flexibility with Bellinger. You can play him at first base. You can play him in center field. And then, you know, the other thing I want to bring up with this Cubs team, speaking of center field, I don't know why Pete Crow, I don't know why Pete Crow Armstrong is in the big leagues right now. I mean, he's batting 200. He's got a 250 on base, 582 OPS. Now, he did hit two home runs the other day, so that was a career day for him. But he really hasn't done that much at the AAA level. Like, he had an on base below 300. They sent him down earlier this year, and they brought him up, and he wasn't really setting AAA on fire. And you could say what you want to about AAA, but I don't know. PCA, there's a lot of talk about kind of what type of prospect is he. So far, I mean, he's shown that he has an elite. He has the speed. He's a great defensive center fielder. So he'll have a career as at least a, you know, defensive replacement type player. Like, he's going to be a big leaguer, and he's got a great arm, but the bat has not come around. And I think that that's very concerning for a lot of people.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably a concern if you're competing, but that's one of those things. If Chicago finds himself out of it, I think they need to get him more reps and kind of prepare him to be the everyday guy in center next year. That's how I see it. Dynamax kind of have a similar problem with Alec Thomas, although not as good a defender and base runner as Crow Armstrong. Although Thomas has had his moments. You talked about the NLCS home run against Philadelphia. That's probably the biggest hit in Dynamax history that didn't involve Tony Womack or Luis Gonzalez.
I was at that game too. I got some cheap tickets. Was up in the nosebleeds.
That might be the best pool shot in D-back history. But
it's got to be. It's got to be. Have they done a bobblehead, Alec Thomas pool home run bobblehead yet? Because I feel like that's a bobblehead that's just waiting to be made.
I think they did a T-shirt when
T-shirt. Perfect.
I did not get one.
Darn.
Despite covering that game. But anyways, jokes aside with the. So looking at Crow Armstrong, obviously, yeah, there's not a lot there.
No, I have not seen. I mean, he's only 22 years old. I personally think I'd send him back down. I think they should have done that earlier. I wouldn't have brought him up when they brought him up. You could play Bellinger in center field, and that's the kind of, again, the funny thing is they've got these outfield prospects who are like corner outfielders, and they've got other ones. They've got Brennan Davis. They've got Kevin Alcantara, who we saw in the home run derby in the fall league. You're sitting right next to me. You're tracking everything on your computer. That was a good time.
Yeah. And well, it's because I was doing double duty that night.
Yeah. You were working hard.
And then, gotta get the local guy in there too. Brennan Davis.
Yeah.
Local guy relative to me.
Oh, Vesha, yeah.
Vesha High School is only about 7 miles from my house.
Oh, okay. Hey, would you, if you don't mind me asking, Cam Kiminiti, were you surprised that he fell to pick 24? I mean, did you get a chance to watch him at any point?
No, I didn't get a chance to watch him. I was surprised he made it. Everyone was surprised he made it past San Francisco at 13.
Yeah. I was shocked. I thought the three best value picks in the draft were, actually, I'd just say three best picks in the first round were Cam Kiminiti. I think it was a 24 with the Braves. I like Charlie Condon pick three.
Colorado.
Rockies.
That guy's going to hit homers.
The best pick, I cannot believe that Jack Caglione fell to the Royals at six. I think he's going to be the best player in this draft.
I don't consider sliding one pick as a fall, though. Kansas City was commonly mock destination for him.
I mean, I was surprised. I thought the White Sox would have taken him at five. I don't know. I personally think he's the best player in the draft. So the fact that you get the best player in the draft at pick six, regardless of what the mocks were looking like, I just think that's tremendous value. And I'm very intrigued to see how Kansas City is going to try him as a two-way guy. I don't think that's going to last.
No.
But I like the fact they're going to at least give him that chance.
Kansas City's kind of a weird fit. Like, Chicago's a better fit, in my opinion, for Caglione because they have a small ballpark and he's a power. His His power bat is the carrying tool in his profile. Well, there's a lot of swing and miss in that, but
yeah, like I said, I agree with that. I think the White Sox would have been a great fit. I mean, I saw Kags play at the College World Series last year, and I was just blown away. I saw him pitch. I saw him hit a couple of home runs. I was just like, man, this guy is a stud.
So how many first-round picks? How many first-round picks in that College World Series final?
Well, you got Skeens, Cruz, Langford, Kags. I think those were the four. Was there anyone else?
And Tommy White won the second round this year. Let me check. I know LSU got some. LSU, I thought, had a couple players drafted high.
Well, last year it was great because not only were in the championship, but you also had like Braden Taylor from TCU. You had Rhett Lauder from Wake Forest. There was the Wake Forest pitcher who was selected the other night by
Chase
the Reds.
Burns. He wasn't with them though.
Oh, right. Where was he at? Did he transfer in?
I think he used to go to Tennessee.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. But there were a lot. I mean, there were a lot of marquee college players. There was that catcher from Virginia last year? I can't remember his name.
Kyle Teal.
Yeah, Kyle Teal.
Yeah, he's broken out with Boston.
Yeah, there were a lot of really good. It was like it was an awesome star-studded College World Series where it was like each team had somebody, except for Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts didn't.
I know someone that went there and got drafted.
Oh, who was that?
Of course, the round doesn't exist.
Do you miss having the 40-round draft?
As a writer, no. But obviously, when you have 40 rounds, there's more chances to get lucky. Yeah, no LSU in the first round this year.
There was one player who I did see last year that I was surprised did not get drafted. Now, I wasn't talking to any scouts about the draft. I wasn't keeping up on every single draft report, mock draft, all that stuff. But the third baseman at Grand Canyon, Eli Payton, saw him play in the WAC champion or the WAC tournament. Was very impressed with him. I like his swing. I thought he'd get drafted. He went undrafted. And he was a transfer from UCLA. So I imagine he'll come back for a senior year unless he decides to transfer somewhere. He's out playing the Cape right now. He's someone I'll have my eye on going into next season, but I will say I was surprised. GCU did have two other kids drafted, Tyler Wilson and one of the pitchers. That's been a really good program. Do you want to talk about like kind of local stuff to Arizona? I think they've had a guy drafted 10 straight years, 8 straight years, something like that. This was a
DC, I was going to say
not that long ago.
I would say GCU has almost risen to the level of ASU, but obviously in U of A as a baseball program in recent years. Obviously the big comparison is the two team GCU doesn't have quite the same tournament success as the two now Big 12 programs. I was going to say ASU and U of A going to the Big 12 probably enhances the baseball profile in that conference because some of the other schools aren't really known for baseball.
Well, Sam Houston had their catcher went on day in the first round. Walker Janik, I believe his name was.
I meant his name to watch for the Diamondbacks at 29, but of course, if you want to know who the Diamondbacks draft pick is, just pay attention to what Keith Law has to write.
What was Keith saying?
Slade Caldwell, who ended up being the... He said Slade Caldwell is not getting past the Diamondbacks at 29.
And have you met Keith? He was at the fall
league. I think I might have crossed paths with him one fall league day, but I did not get a chance to talk. When I came in, he was walking out.
Okay, I was talking to him right before that, and then you came in. That's right. Yeah. We're talking. I've met him a couple times. He's an interesting guy, very bright guy. Grew up reading a lot of his stuff, too, so that was cool. Talk to him.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was a time where a lot of people in the Snake Pit hated Keith Law because he took shots at the Diamondbacks organization. Of course, they I would say they didn't necessarily in a position they didn't deserve it. And this is when Dave Stewart was the GM.
Yeah, he can be a little snarky online. I'll just leave it at that. I'm sorry, I got us entirely sidetracked. Did you have more Cubs Diamondback stuff you wanted to get to? This is your show. I don't want to hijack it.
No, I was going to say, nah, it's fine. It's probably better this way. But yeah, I was going to say the main thing I think with Chicago is how are they going to navigate the injuries? Like I said, Bellinger, despite him having a down year, is still an above average.
Yeah.
Well, no longer first baseman because Bush has kind of taken a stranglehold of that job. Although I would say the only reason it didn't work out is because they signed Freddie Freeman.
The Bush trade is very interesting from the Dodgers' perspective. I mean, we got to see what Jackson Ferris becomes and how he does and how this whole thing plays out. But, I mean, is there a way that had they kept Michael Bush, is there a way that they could have, I mean, do you DH Michael Bush if you bring him up? And then who are they?
Nobody can DH. You can't DH a position player. They've got Shohei as the DH now.
Oh, right. Yeah, they got Shohei. Bush. Go ahead.
They would have tried playing him at third base, but he wasn't the third baseman.
Yes.
Problem is they signed Freddie Freeman, so he was blocked at first base.
So they could have done the third base thing because he did some of that in the minors. And they're kind of, I mean, if there was a team that would try that, it would be the Dodgers. They're putting Mookie at short now. So, like, I think that maybe there's a situation in which they could have tried him out at third base. But, I mean, internally, they must not have loved him as a third baseman. That's why they traded him, because there just wasn't a, this is a guy who's ready for the big leagues. He didn't have a spot.
3 years straight.
Sorry, what?
I just said for 3 years straight. I was just adding on top.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I think he's ready, but I mean, the Cubs, he's been their best player. And see, this is what I think the Cubs need, though, is they need guys like this who are coming up, who they're giving opportunities to, these young kids, and just see what you got in them. And maybe you have something, maybe you have a budding star, maybe you don't. But I don't know. I think the Cubs are kind of in this weird spot right now where they're not horrible. But it's kind of the no man's land that you don't want to be in. It's kind of like my Pittsburgh Steelers, where it's like, okay, they're going to go 9-8 each year. They might make the playoffs. They're not going to win a playoff game. It's been 8 or 9 years since they won a playoff game. 8 years, I want to say. And I mean, so the last playoff game they won was 8 years ago. And it's just like, you know, they're never going to have a high pick where they're actually going to draft a franchise changing quarterback. Not that the draft is going to, it doesn't quite work that way in baseball with the high draft picks, but I don't know. I mean, I just think the Cubs are kind of stuck in a weird in-between spot right now. And I don't really know what the path is for them to, you know, turn a corner and be a true contender. But I do think that this new postseason is with the additional postseason spot that's now available with the third wild card. This was a story that the Cubs owner, Tom Ricketts, watched the Diamondbacks last year and was like, that could be us. That should be us. So the Cubs, it almost encourages teams to kind of just be okay, just to try to get in and not really develop a team that's great. Cause all you need is to get in and have a puncher's chance and get hot at the right time, have a pretty good pitching staff, which the Cubs have. So, like, I could see why teams would try to just get in, but I think it ends up with a lot of kind of mediocre teams. And you could argue if that's better or worse for the sport than having teams that are kind of blowing things up and selling and trying to just get great through the process of not being very good, but the rebuilding process. Now, the other thing I think that's worth mentioning is there's a lot of chatter. There are several people that have said that Jed Hoyer, Cubs president, who's really the guy who's pulling all the strings with this roster, his contract's up after next year, and there's talk that if he does not make the postseason before that, then he's in trouble. So I mean, that could be why you don't see the team selling off parts here at the deadline, especially if they're within striking distance. They were approaching a territory where they were getting out of it. People were talking about selling, but I mean, they're only 3.5 back right now. So,
yeah, but I was going to say, like I said, there's a tough stretch of teams. Like I said, I feel like obviously the Diamondbacks are a better team than Chicago. They should have won the series in Arizona. They were in position to win the first game of the series, but for whatever reason, forgot how to hit an extra innings. They were in prime position at two. It was what? I didn't give the Cubs credit. They scored in the following inning and then held Arizona down to win in what was it, 11 innings?
I think we've seen a lot of really close games between these teams. So I'm excited for this series. I think it's going to be a good one. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I was going to say Chicago's going to want to score five. It's a race to five. If Chicago could score five runs, they have a good chance of beating the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks, I think, are 7-39 when they allow five runs this year. But when they don't allow five runs, they're like 40. I think they're 41-9. So basically, the Diamondbacks are one of the best teams in baseball when they shut down their opponent's offense. But when they don't, they really struggle. But I'll have to double check those numbers. They've had quite a few wins in that department recently, so they might be closer to the middle of the pack now.
Yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see kind of how things shake out. And I can't understate it. It's a big, big series for the Cubs. Cubs need to, especially at home, they got to win both these series, I think. And I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because the Cubs last year, when they kind of heated up, they played a lot of bad teams. This year, they got, Diamondbacks, Brewers, Royals, and then Reds. And the Reds are no slouches. That team is interesting. They're not great, but I don't know. I'm curious. I got to run here in a few minutes, Michael. I got to run at noon, but I'm curious to hear how you would kind of power rank the teams in the NL Central. Pittsburgh's been playing some good baseball lately.
Yeah, I would put Pittsburgh ahead of Chicago at this point. So I go, I'm still not a big believer in the Cardinals, but I'd put them at the one. So I go Milwaukee, St. Louis, Pittsburgh, Chicago, then you could make an argument for Cincinnati over Chicago too.
You could.
Cincinnati is still on the upswing, in my opinion. They just got crushed. I think they just the Matt McClain injury has really hurt them this year.
Big time. Big injury. Matt McClain. They have gotten some good output from some of those young starting pitchers, which is encouraging for them moving forward. Which is kind of funny that in that ballpark, it's kind of been their pitching that's been the bright spot. The lineup could, they could use more out of their lineup. Ellie De La Cruz, he was named an all-star. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what you get. I kind of think what it's been for the most part this season, it's been a clear Milwaukee is way better than everybody else. St. Louis has emerged as the second best team. And I think the other three teams have kind of been, any given day, who's playing the best ball, where are they at kind of thing. And right now it's Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's heating up. You got to love what they have in Skeens and Jones at the top of their rotation.
Which Keller too.
And Keller. Yeah. Those three guys. And that was kind of where their weakness was last year when they got off to that great start and they had the best record in the National League through the month of April. It's like, you looked at their pitching staff and it's like, okay, what do they have past Mitch Keller? Now you've got two of maybe the two best rookie pitchers in baseball on your roster. So, and pitching is going to win you games. They're kind of fun. I mean, it's a fun story. We'll see if they can keep it going. The Cubs, I don't know. I really don't know where this thing's going to go for them. I probably would put them above Cincinnati based off of how well they played over the last week. But I also saw how poorly they played for the 2 months. And that's the thing you mentioned. The Diamondbacks should have won that series against the Cubs back in April. The Cubs were like an 8 or 9 games over 500 at that, like going into mid-May. So they were in first place and playing very well to open the season. And it's just been a tale of two seasons for this team.
Yeah. I was going to say they're in a position where they're not bad enough to go one direction or good enough to go in another.
Exactly.
That's kind of where the Diamondbacks have been until July as well.
But with the Diamondbacks, I can talk myself into that team being better than it's been with the lineup, with the some of the guys they have in that lineup, with Corbin Carroll, with Christian Walker, with Ketel Marte. Like, those are very good offensive players. The Cubs, and like in the case of a Corbin Carroll, you're hoping that he can get back to what he was last year, which was a top five National League player. In the case of the Cubs don't have anyone with that kind of ceiling on their roster. The guys that have underperformed, it's kind of like Dansby Swanson underperforming. What's the ceiling for Dansby Swanson? Like 240, certainly 320 on base, 25 home runs.
I was going to say certainly a lot better than what they've gotten.
Yeah. Yeah. So the next time we'll have to talk about what's going on with Swanson, because I got a lot of thoughts there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know when the next time the Diamondbacks will play the Cubs, but it probably won't be 2024 unless both teams got hot.
No, but I'm happy to come on another time, Michael. I'm happy to, yeah. If it's not the Cubs, we can just sit here, talk some ball. It's always a fun time.
Yeah. Actually, I've been maybe in person. Well, maybe on a separate occasion, we can talk about Swanson.
Sure. Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah. I got to run here in a couple minutes. So.
All right. So thanks everyone for watching again. Check out the Snakes and Diamond podcast. If you're listening in on audio, make sure follow, subscribe to the podcast, whether it's on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon Music, whatever podcasting platforms that you fancy. If you're watching here on YouTube, make sure to hit that subscribe, leave a like button, comment down below. What do you think of the direction of both the Diamondbacks and the Cubs? Who's going to win that series? And if there is a possibility, either of the two teams can make a wild card. So again, with Jack Vita coming in for talk about the Cubs, I'm Mike McDermott. Thank you all, and have a good rest of your week.